All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Mondays. That means Mondays with Sandy. You know, Sandy, we talk about some really serious subjects and conversations. It's why I thought, you know, 3 hours with you a week was not enough. It's why I increased it to 6 hours. And at times, I still don't think it's enough. As somebody who listens to, you know, the stuff that's over the airwaves and the programs like Meet the Press and those kind of things, and even the ones on the MSNBC and those kind of things, those kind of stations, they're not having these real conversations. And I'm not saying those people, you've been on those channels, I'm not saying that those people aren't aware that those people who are having those, leading those conversations aren't bright. They are. You've been on them nationally. But they, certain areas, they just stray away from. They have an opportunity to really make this conversation that you are talking about constantly, making America better, they have an opportunity to be able to do that. Why won't they?
Well, you know, it's not clear. I mean, I think we all, I think this gets into the American subconscious and our culture's subconscious. A lot of foreign affairs and the notion of patriotism is built into our subconscious. It's a leap of faith. America's great, that's one thing, but America, particularly as it stands in foreign policy, is something that we have to get behind as on a united basis. And you can see now that liberals and conservatives almost compete with one another as to how militant and hawkish they can be about, for instance, the situation in Ukraine. So that instead of maybe doing an evaluation of a foreign policy of America and how did we get here and what is the general situation in the world and a factual analysis of it, we find MSNBC being at least as militant and hawkish as Fox News. And in fact, more militant than Fox News. I mean, Fox News has someone like Tucker Carlson who doesn't explain why, but he's cheering for Russia in the conflict without explaining to the world why it might actually make sense to at least have a more sympathetic view to the Russian situation. So I find myself totally reflective, trying to figure things out in retrospect. Why did I think this all along?
Right.
You know, it's sort of like going to a psychologist and suddenly having an epiphany about what it is that's been wrong all this time.
So you see, as you talked about, as we get older and more years behind us than ahead of us, you really start thinking differently, as you stated. You really start saying, have we really been... Have I really been so gullible and naive? Was that me all the time, or is it because our years have gotten shorter that we want to make things better?
Well, I think it might no, because I think there are plenty of people our age who are just as knee-jerk, jingoistic as they always were. I think it might just have to do with the desire to keep learning, and so I think to the extent that more of us would have a desire to get into a state of continual education and learning, try and figure out why, ask the question
right.
Why much more often than maybe we did when we were younger. Why is an important issue, maybe the most important issue to address when we're doing something, and why is a question we don't ask ourselves anywhere near enough when we look at our social issues. Why is there such a problem in central cities? Why are we having these problems internationally? Why does the United States leap into military adventures and leave the world worse rather than better when we exit? You know, why?
Let's do this. Who do we have on the line?
David's calling from California.
Hey, David from California. How you doing, sir? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Oh, thanks, Earl. I was wondering if your guest was familiar with Naomi Klein and her book about the shock doctrine, where people, and whether they're in politics or in positions of power, intentionally ruin sections of the country so they can buy them up cheap, as Donald Trump got most of his properties because they were declared blighted areas. And so he got a good part of New York City is at a dollar an acre sort of arrangement. And I'm just, you know, hearing you trying to figure out why the political parties are in such turmoil, it really seems like the shock doctrine is at work.
Well, you know, that's connecting dots backwards. And I'm not sure that everything bad that happens is the result of cognitive and purposeful conduct to start with. For instance, redlining. I mean, you can look at the history of redlining, which created the opportunity for wealthy people to buy property cheaply, but it wasn't a policy that was adopted for that reason. It was adopted by lenders and by the organizations that were insuring mortgages.
Separate people.
Who decided that there was a risk to the value of property that was caused by racial mixing and racial influx. So it was invidious, and it was wrong thinking because it was racially based. The people who were doing it thought it was factually based, and they turned out to be right in some respects because there was a white flight that occurred when blacks moved into areas. But the white flight might have been caused by the hysteria and the realization or the self-fulfilling prophecy of what was going on at the time. But that created much of the cheap property, for instance, for people like Donald Trump. And so was it a policy created by government to make the way for wealth making for private equity funds and real estate investors? I think not. But I think it was invidious. So yeah, just I just don't buy the conspiracy theories that take you all the way to this was willful conduct for the purpose of achieving the outcome that was the result. I think it was willful conduct in many times for purposes that weren't necessarily good purposes, but they weren't the purposes you're describing.
Well, there's a book that was written in the late 1960s. It was, I've forgotten the street address, but it's something on Rose Avenue in New York City, and it was a mob headquarters, and it describes a good part of what you're describing about the New York white flight, that it was organized crime figured out that if they got if they stirred up the bigotry and caused people to flee, then organized crime could actually be involved in the real estate brokerage of inviting blacks into the neighborhood. Then they would only be able to pay rent or pay for a mortgage for two or three months, and then they would evict them and foreclose.
David, I wish we had more time, yeah. Man, but thank you very much for the call. Thank you for listening, Sandy.
Well, David's right, actually. I think there is a history of not necessarily organized crime, but shady real estate dealers who participated in trying to create white flight by basically facilitating the movement of blacks in the neighborhoods and then spreading hysteria. That kind of thing did occur, I believe. And I think there is a factual, I think there have been prosecutions, in fact, of criminal prosecutions based on that.
You know, Sandy, I will never get tired of you lifting the IQ of myself and the listening audience. And, man, you just really, you never let me down. It's always something that keeps me thinking. And I'm sure that many in the listening audience feel the same way. So always great to have you on. You'll be back with me on Friday. Thank everybody who made the show go. Thank you, Sam, the son. You won't have to worry about it as much today. See you guys on tomorrow.